gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain megahertz. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble, helping you gain the upper hand with your computer. Here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
This is Computer Talk Radio, and I've got a number of things in store for you this week. We've actually got a couple of guests stepping in for Keith McCidor. We've got guest industry analyst Dr. Doreen Galley, and she's going to be talking with me in regards to Apple and how it might be at a crossroads of success and, well, not success. Mark Brownstein is going to step in for Marty. He's going to talk about the Merlin Bird ID from Cornell University. We've got a scam series, $800,000 business loan offer to me. Well, it's a crazy scam to lure me in and you in because the bad guys, yes, as I always say, are out to get us. Steve Keske is going to talk about automation coming into our lives on the IT Pro series. Our work chats can be used against us. I am going to mention that every company needs to be a tech company. And if you're not a tech company right now, if you're not focused on tech, you're making a mistake. And Travis has a question. What makes one router better than another when ISP speeds are the same? And I'm also going to talk about donations of blood. And coming up next, I'm going to weigh in on our moral obligations, and they exceed how the various licensing items have taken over. And there's more to that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. If you miss any of these different items, of course, check out the podcast at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com, where you can reach me there, or you can phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news, and big news keeps coming about the return to office. The biggest announcement was in the last week or so, Amazon advised their employees to resign or relocate. Let's be clear. The numbers aren't public, but the demand has been shared far and wide. We don't know exactly how many have been given 30 days to decide and 60 days to complete. This is disturbing because this may involve the decision, the action of selling a home and relocating as much as halfway across the country to one of three locations, going to Seattle, going to Washington, D.C., or another location in Virginia. There's no severance pay because it's a resignation. But let's put that aside. It also comes at a time where the company is touting employee reductions due to AI, for which they will commit $105 billion to this in the coming year, or in this year, actually. You know, I really fear that other companies may see this brash move and decide to follow suit, all to put people in an open office concept with cube farms and hoteling that makes workers even more miserable. Walmart has a new store concept, and we're not going to see it. We're going to experience this as they start rolling this out. Across the country, their competitor, Amazon, created fulfillment centers to ensure delivery of some products, many products, to your doorstep in a matter of hours. Walmart is duplicating this concept, starting off in Dallas, Texas, and Bentonville, Arkansas. These so-called dark stores will carry many of the products, but in a way that will deliver products faster than a live store environment where customers and workers share the same space. You can expect that there will be some automation over the long haul, but less shopper-friendly shelving and other changes may take this concept to a new level. Chances are that now and the coming months may bring lower prices to PCs as vendors shipped a large volume of parts in preparations for tariffs, which haven't arrived. They're not in place, at least at this moment. The volume is 15% higher than normal, but current expectations are that a lot of people are going to continue resisting Windows 11. There's an expected 4% decline in the consumer space of buying PCs and laptops, driving sales volume lower. Now, keep an eye out for the things that you need or maybe want and check the specs against the other brands. We're going to see some price wars, I think, you know, along the way here. Higher-end systems that are capable of the work environment, however, they may not see a shift, as there is actually an expected 8% rise on that front. Now, I want you to picture this one. And this is probably really easy for everyone. You go, you rent a car, and you return it pristine. And that's the end of the story. But now, there's a new approach. Now you return it pristine, or so you think, and then you get a bill from an AI scanner called UVI that there was this small, minor little dent that you never saw before. This paints the picture of a very dystopian future that has actually already arrived through Hertz, the major famous rental agency. There are many folks that are reporting that this massive scanner that goes, they review the car before and after you rent. They run it through and they check for everything. And this AI is going to just start scanning and flagging some of the smallest things. One reported charge was $250 for damage, $125 for processing, and $65 for an administrative fee for a one-inch scratch on a wheel. Even worse, arguing this is nearly impossible, as we have evolved. All companies have evolved, and they've got these AI-driven voice response units, and it's harder and harder to get a live person on the phone to even complain about, yes, a $400-plus charge. So I think about this. You know, I get an accident. I get major incidents. Okay, you know, we rented you this car, and there's this big, huge dent in the side of it. But, you know, nickel and diming customers for something they can't even discuss? This has just turned into one big, huge money grab by Hertz. And I'm just at a loss to even pretend to explain this. Now, of course, we know that technology is evolving and different things along the way are going to change. A woman freaked out on TikTok because her phone charging cord was the older USB-A style, not the new USB-C style that was in her brand new car. This garnered a lot of negative attention from the viewers of her video, who pointed out there are replacement cables, there are adapters, and so much more available for pennies. Well, maybe not pennies, but a matter of you can get a new cord, a new charging cord for whatever phone you've got for somewhere around $10. Maybe pay $15, maybe $20 if you want like one of the high-end ones. You've got a brand new car. You've got a brand new car with hundreds of dollars in payments. You can afford a $10 cord. This is a part of standardization, moving to the USB-C. And this is progress in technology. I mean, I do feel for her. I've been in the industry for a long time, and I've had to adapt and overcome a lot of these obstacles in the way. But there are solutions here, and these are easy solutions, not like some of the things I've gone through over the years. Technology is going to be giving us so many things over the coming years, and one of our goals should always be to personally seek to adapt to whatever change comes along. It's going to be inevitable. We moved from the pen and the pencil through typewriters and PCs to these marvelous devices that fit in our pockets and plug into our car. It's going to be arriving. Along the lines of that same evolving front here, I want to point to something back in my early, early years here. I took my first computer programming course on a Commodore VIC-20. Now, that was in the early 80s. In the mid-80s, I actually took another class in programming on a Commodore PET. The company has since been to the end, and they closed their doors in 1994. Since then, the branding itself has been thrown about like a hot potato. And there are always new owners coming along. Oh, the Commodore name. That we can capitalize on this. We can go ahead and we can make a new Commodore that is a PC instead of the Commodore. And we've seen so many different attempts. And now, we do see a new name stepping forward in an attempt to relaunch. They purchased all that they could, whether it was the name, there's some levels of the patents from computers that are 40 years old and things like that. But for a number that was in the low millions. Now, it's interesting because there's a lot more behind this. There are a lot of names from the early days of Commodore that are in this venture, but that's really the only news we've got right now. We're going to have to watch and wait and see what they make of this brand name. Coming up next, I'm going to weigh in on our moral obligations and contrast that to how licensing has evolved over the recent years. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Website ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. I'm going to open up this particular topic by noting that I am not without sin. I have made mistakes in my past, but they are behind me. I've handled as many of them as I could and corrected my ways, and that's part of what we are all called to do, to be better in our lives. No matter what kind of framing you put it on, it's still a must. We need to do the right thing. I've recently seen a number of items over the course of the last 2 weeks in what I would consider otherwise reputable media. And it revolves around one concept. And one of them called it, if buying isn't ownership, then piracy isn't theft. Well, what? Okay, I'm struggling with this. There's this seductive idea that's being presented to us. If I don't own what I bought, then pirating that very same thing isn't really stealing. It's snappy, it's provocative, and it's morally bankrupt. This line of reasoning, this isn't some kind of brave stance that they're taking. It's a shortcut. And shortcuts are rarely the high road, especially when we're talking about something that is a moral issue. You can be driving down the road and you can decide, hey, it's heavy traffic here. I'm going to take a shortcut around. And usually, you know, you might get some serendipitous viewing of parts of town you've never seen. And that may be great. But this is morals. I'm not going to mince words here. Piracy is theft. Full stop. There is no other thing going on here. It's piracy and it's theft. When you take something that somebody else has made and you don't pay for it, you take it without permission. You just take it and you walk away, you run away, you hide behind your keyboard, whatever it is. You are not fighting injustice. You're just helping yourself to someone else's work and you're pretending that this is some kind of activism or something like that. That's not rebellion. That is plain and simple rationalization. This is completely an irresponsible way to go. So what if we don't like the license model instead of outright ownership? This is not right. Okay, you might say, what about all of those digital licenses? Okay, I get the licensing has grown far more frustrating with end user license agreements that go on for books and books worth of paper. It's just a ton of these different things. And buried in there, yes, there's something that says, oh, we actually own this. The Switch 2 that came out. There's a lot revolving around the whole idea of how they've locked it down, and you have a license to utilize the hardware which you bought with the software that you bought, and that is all still owned, controlled, and managed by Nintendo. So I get the frustration. We've moved from tangible ownership. I remember back in the years of old, I had cassette tapes, and then I went into going to vinyl records. A little bit backwards. A lot of people had vinyl records before that, but I then went into CDs, and now we're moving into MP3s. And we've moved from that tangible ownership, and it doesn't matter. That's just the music approach. We can talk about VHS tapes and then going to DVD, then going to Blu-ray. Now we're into all of the streaming. And we can talk about books, how we used to physically own books. And I own a number of books. I also have a Kindle. And at any point in time, they can say, oh, you no longer have the right to read that particular book. Oddly enough, Orwellian enough, 1984 was one of the ones that they pulled back from people who had Kindles and had that book and paid for it. So we've moved to this cloud of subscriptions, of DRM locks and licenses that can vanish if a company shutters. But what you have is you can criticize the system. You can push for stronger consumer rights. You can support creators who offer DRM-free products or permanent downloads. What you cannot do, at least not without some serious moral compromise, is justify stealing under the banner of protest. Let's talk about the kind of society we should be continuing to build. Society has existed for thousands of years, and we've gotten to this point here. But in a functioning, ethical society, we do not abandon moral responsibility because the business models are flawed. Two wrongs don't make a revolution. They make a mess. We do need to support the creators that we admire. That indie game developer, that author, that musician, whoever it is, they aren't the enemy. And yet piracy hurts them the most. And in a functioning ethical society, we acknowledge that morality shouldn't, cannot, does not bend based on our convenience. Would you, I want you to think about this. Would you walk out of a store with a Blu-ray under your jacket and tell the clerk, I'm just making a point about media licensing? No, you wouldn't. Then we should not be doing any kind of the digital equivalency of this. We need to be doing the right thing all the way along. We need to make sure that people are paid for their work, for their product that they put out. Yes, it is very, very disconcerting that Tesla, just as an example, can pull features out of the car that you paid good money for. Or when you're reselling your Tesla, that your automatic driving, the assisted driving features that you paid, whatever it was, $6,000, I think was the number. That you paid $6,000 for, well, the new owner also has to pay that $6,000. That's not a good way to do business, but the way we treat that is we stop doing business with the companies that perform those kinds of actions to dig into all of our pockets for more cash. Look, excuses are easy. Ethics are harder. And just because a product is one click away doesn't give you the right to take it. It doesn't mean that you can make it your own. Just because a company plays legal gymnastics with ownership doesn't give any of us the permission, the right to stop playing by the moral rules that have been laid out for centuries. We cannot cherry pick ethics like we're at a salad bar. If we want a moral society, and I believe we all do, I believe that we all, deep down, want everybody to play by a fair set of rules, a moral set of rules. Yes, we need to build all of this on fairness, creativity, and respect. I don't care what the other media people are saying out there, that it's okay, that even if they're posing the question, I don't think we should be posing the question. I don't care what kind of problems they've gone through. We all go through problems in life, and it's how you and I deal with these problems that show what kind of character that we have deep down inside. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Benjamin is always ready to answer your questions. You may submit your questions online using the contact form at the Computer Talk Radio website, computertalkradio.com. Alternatively, you may call Benjamin at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. We will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Keith McIntosh is out this week. He is our resident Mac pundit, Apple pundit, and covers a lot of different things. But I was in a conversation with Dr. Doreen Galley of TBW Advisors, and I said, hey, Doreen, can we talk about Apple and where it is right now? Where do you think it's going? Because I'm looking at it, and I'm a little confused on some of their things. But actually, before we even dive into that, this is your first time on the show. So let me have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about TBW Advisors.
Thank you so much. Yes, so we are out of fabulous Las Vegas. And we do our research at the many technology conferences here in town, producing conference whispers and whisper reports. And we have a YouTube channel as well as an email mailing list.
Very cool. So tbwadvisors.com would be your website. Did I get that right?
You are correct. Absolutely.
Right. So let's dive into the question, though. I am struggling right now with Apple. I am looking at Apple and I'm going, there's a lot of different directions. I feel like it had some steam going when Steve Jobs was around, and when he passed away, it's lost its steam for me. I'm no longer as enthralled as I was. Is the industry seeing that, or do they still hold hopes for Apple? What do you see?
That's a great question. Admittedly, I'm an Apple user.
Yeah.
But I'm not necessarily the happiest of users of late because I have a mini phone, haven't been able to upgrade it. I don't want to carry around an entire computer when I'm out on a run, but I love my phone with me in case I need to take a picture in an emergency, even though I have the cellular watch as well.
Yeah. Okay. So you're in the, so you are utilizing, and a lot of people are, I mean, they are the number one, as far as the smartphones go, they are definitely, as you know, whatever they've got, 55% of the market, something like that. And that is, I don't think is going to die very soon, but I feel like we've seen a lot of stagnation from them. We haven't seen as much. What have you seen?
Yeah, no, admittedly, when you just said the smartphone market, it intellectually caught me off guard because I'm not thinking my phone's very smart. When I say, Siri, tell me where the NFL games are on TV today, at what time, and where can I see them stream? So I can look at list of everyone who's playing, where they are, figure out what services and what games I can catch during the football season. We're starting to catch up. I know, live by the Raiders headquarters and they're already, you know, getting going with training and everything. But that seems like a very simple question, right? What NFL games are on TV? What time? Where can I see them?
Sure.
And the answers are quite hilarious. And if you don't ask all the details, it won't think to tell you. Like, it won't think to tell you that the game is on this channel at this time. It'll just say, they're playing this team today. And you're like, well, couldn't you figure out I actually, obviously, I'm thinking about watching the game. So it doesn't read your mind. Sometimes it doesn't hear you when you speak. Sometimes it doesn't translate properly. But I've never really felt my iPhone is smart.
Yeah, Apple intelligence seems to be kind of like the in that same category as military intelligence. It's kind of not there.
Missing in action. Absolutely. Yeah. And even like the machines are heavier, right, compared to like, because I have a Surface. Obviously, I spent some time at Microsoft, so I have a Pro and I have a Surface. Right. So I have Apple and a Microsoft laptop. My Microsoft laptop always knows me. As a matter of fact, I have it set up so my husband is known on my computer too, and he has his own side so that when I steal the Mac, he has a computer to use. I know. So some days we'll just have to replicate, but it's not like it's used, you know, each has their purpose. And he always loves how the Surface knows him, but he goes to as Apple, and I can use my fingerprint, but it never works for him. And so he is always stuck with, you know, logging in, or sometimes it works right with his watch and sometimes it doesn't, but it gives him the worst time. And for me, since I'm the second user on the Pro, if I want to go and do something on his side of the computer, it's a nightmare. Or when I try to get to the second side, if he's also logged in, for some reason, it's an argument with the system. I can't just click on my profile and say, I want to log in. And by the way, I have my watch on. So electronically, you should know it's me. It should be harder when I try to go on his side. But yet, a lot of times, if his side is logged in, I have to argue with the computer to, and this is a very simple function, basic laptop function, is having multiple people use the family laptop and you both be always being able to get into your own portion easily.
Sure. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
So with Apple, I feel like it's rudderless. I'm and Keith and I have talked about some of this over the he corrects himself because he's knee deep in this. So he still has that love for it. But I'm starting to see the cracks. I'm hearing from other people around me that they're feeling less thrilled with it.
It's on the edge, and the only reason I say that is, I did experience those Apple glasses.
Yeah.
At CES.
Yeah.
Now, they are bulky and heavy. So ignore that aspect because it is a prototype meant to develop the next generation technology. It is not meant for people to wear walking around. Although I saw a DJ at EDC use them type of thing.
Yeah.
And they used the full functionality. That seemed like a great use case. But they really are kind of heavy. Like, you probably have to do neck exercises to properly use it. But when you have it on and you use the functionality, being able to see reality, yet pulling your computer and all of that, that experience did make me drool. And so sometimes right before someone's able and about to take a major pounce forward, they look kind of stinky and slow.
Yeah.
And so if it is coming, then that would be the thing to justify it. But will everyone hold on long enough for it to come out?
Very cool.
If there is some of this stuff magically coming out.
Very cool. Well, we'll definitely have to watch that. Dr. Doreen Galley with TBW Advisors, the website tbwadvisors.com. Thank you very much. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Marty Winston's out this week, but Mark Brownstein has come back to join us again. And Mark, you're from Southern California. As a matter of fact, I know the area which you're in. I've spent every once in a while, about once or twice a year, I would go up in your up in your neck of the woods, and I know you wanted to talk about birds, and that's really cool because you know what? There's a lot of birds in Southern California. It is it's a beautiful place, of course.
More than I know, and I'm learning.
So you had some kind of a bird app or something?
Yeah, I do. It's an interesting app. It's called Merlin ID. It's done by the Cornell University Ornithology Department, and it's available for free from Cornell. It's called Merlin ID, and it IDs birds. It's available for both Android and the iPhone, and I'm really enjoying it. What it does is it will ask you where you're located and look up the birds in your specific area. You could record, or you can just have it identify the birds. And what it does is it will listen to the birds, and it will tell you what it determines to have been. So what I've done is my wife used to call a bird that I fished out of a swimming pool, figured that it is remembering me and it's coming back every year. And it tweets for her, it tweets for me, and she was calling it a robin when actually it's not.
So you thought for however long that it was a robin, but it turned out to be something. What was it? What?
I think it was a California towhee, T-O-W-H-E-E. Not sure how you pronounce it, but that's what it was. It's a cute little bird, and it's got kind of a fuzzy black head.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's the one of them. It wasn't a robin. It was towhee. The way Cornell's thing works is it takes a spectrum of the sound, and it matches the spectrum to the birds in its database.
Okay.
And so it's finding a lot more birds than I thought I had. It's identifying a lot more birds than I thought I had. We thought we had crows in the tree, but they sound like an old rotary dial telephone. And I used to tell my wife, hey, your bird is ringing. It wasn't the bird.
Your bird is ringing. There you go.
Your bird is ringing. So actually a raven doing some kind of mating call or something.
Okay.
And we do have crows. We've got some ducks from down the street. Mm-hmm. We have black phoebe, whatever that is. We've got quite a few birds identified that I didn't even know we had.
So going
outside and setting the thing up either to record or just to identify the birds is an interesting education. I've got all kinds of birds that now I think I know a little bit more of. And there's an application that you can select the bird. You mm-hmm. can hear its call. You can hear its...
So it flips it on its head. It basically identifies yeah. it, but it also will allow you to play back and start to learn to identify as well.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And it's really nice. I'm able to see the birds, identify the birds. There's a database that you can learn about other birds. Okay. I played a cardinal. You can't have a cardinal here in Southern California. I don't know if it's that they can't live here or they never made the flight above across the continental divide or what. But we do not have cardinals here.
Okay.
And so I could look it up and I could play its song. I know what it sounds like. And that's probably the closest I'll ever get to a cardinal.
So I remember the sparrows, of course, used to yeah. always return to San Juan Capistrano. Went down there a couple of times for seeing that over the years that I lived in Southern California.
Swallows.
Swallows. Yeah, yes, swallows, not sparrows. I don't, I don't follow birds okay. much. Unless they're metal birds, you know, airplanes.
Yeah. An interesting thing that I've run into. There used to be a place called Busch Gardens about 40 years ago, and it took over a space that was part of the Anheuser-Busch property. And they had tram rides, and they had all kinds of exotic birds, and they closed it up to put more production in there.
Yeah.
So they got rid of the birds. I think they shipped some out, but some escaped.
Uh-huh.
So
now is that the Busch Gardens in Florida, or there's one in Virginia?
This was the one in Van Nuys.
Oh,
There
was one in Van Nuys.
That's right.
Okay. Wow. Vaguely, there's something pain, there was a Marineland as well in Southern California.
Yes, Marineland of the Pacific. Oh, yeah. I hate to say who owns that property. But it's been made into a golf course, I think. And I don't need to tell you, you can probably guess. So back to the Busch Gardens thing.
Yeah.
This Merlin ID knows what kind of birds I've got here in Southern California. We've got peacocks. They call peahens, and they're called peafowl. And I'm just waiting to see what it's going to do when it hears a peacock.
Very interesting. I have experienced that. As a matter of fact, I used to ride a motorcycle through the hills above Whittier, California, and there were a number of them up in that area. And I would always be very careful because I didn't want to come around a corner and run into one of those.
That's right. Yeah, they've got them back here from Chatsworth up into Pasadena and to Whittier, all over the place.
Yeah, all the way along that mountain chain. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Mark Brownstein. Hey, thanks for filling in for Marty.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to do it.
All right. I'll be back with more Computer Talk Radio in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E,
ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they have all kinds of different tricks up their sleeves. And this one was so blatantly obvious when they presented this that I laughed at it and I dismissed it. But somehow I keep getting this same kind of offer. It differs a little bit on some of the numbers and some of the details. But I'm going to read off this latest email. And it's based upon improved commercial credit insights, a revolving business credit facility up to $795,000 is now authorized for Computer Talk Radio. Our recent analysis of your trade account performance reveals opportunities to transition current short-term obligation with higher rates into a longer-term competitively priced credit solution. Blah, 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 goes on, and it talks about the interest rate and how much money that I'm authorized for, and it's a revolving credit. We need to be discerning. This one was way over the top. This is something that I will tell you that if somebody came along with cash in hand, truly had cash in hand and wanted to buy all of the different assets for Computer Talk Radio, when they did their due diligence, they would find out it's not worth that much, not by a long stretch. But if they had cash, I'd take it. But this is something that's trying to lure me in. This is something that you may see in your company. You may see this in your personal email. You may see some of any one of a number of different variations on this theme. They pretend to know all about you. They pretend like they're going to hand you all kinds of cash. But I know the flip side of this. All they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to click through. They're trying to get you to take that next step. And what is that next step? Filling out paperwork. And what's on that paperwork? All kinds of information about you, all about your personal finances. They're going to ask for your banking account information. Oh, we'll go ahead and we will drop this in your bank. We'll wire this money to you. But of course, all of these different things can be used against you in so many ways, whether we're talking about just scraping the information to actually scraping your banking account for far more than you could ever imagine. Look, we've always talked about this. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. In this case, it obviously is. We need to sit back and look at the reality of every single message we get. We need to think through, how would a bad guy use this against me? What are the different motives that they have going on here? Even if they said $20,000, I would raise an eyebrow to this, especially since some of this wording here that they found my email, and actually it wasn't even my email, and they ran a background check on me and my entire company and said, oh, it's worth a lot of money. Let's give you cash right now. The real world doesn't work that way. If I need a loan, I'm just going to go down to my local bank and get it there. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Can't find out what to buy at the computer store? Benjamin Rockwell's got the answer, helping you make sense of technology. Here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, of course, is ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. The phone number, if you want to reach out to me, you can do it either place, the website or via phone. How old-fashioned, via voice. The phone number there, of course, is 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Steve Keske joins me now, and along the lines of that broadest look, one of the things that I encourage people to look into automation. Technology in itself is looking for ways to make our lives easier, and automation is just one subset of that. So it is a very valuable thing. And Steve, you and I have talked about automation in the past. What is one of the things that really thrills you the most about automation?
Oh, all the variations.
Okay.
Yeah. And because now automation is not just in manufacturing of your automobiles and your motorcycles and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You also get into the manufacturing of food.
Yes. Yes.
And thanks to Henry Ford and, you know, all that assembly line stuff.
Yeah.
You sit there and you're watching these people make their all food at, you know, amazing rates of speed.
Yes. And yes, indeed.
Your food is made and put together, which is wonderful. But they're finding now that automation was always going faster to get more out to make it cheaper.
Yes.
But that's not necessarily true anymore.
Okay.
They're starting to slow down certain processes. Oh, not by much. A few seconds here and a few seconds there. But in the long run, they're finding out that by slowing it down just that few seconds, they're coming out with better products.
Yes.
Especially
yes.
In the food area. It tastes a little bit better because you slowed the process down and it's, you know, like that particular item in the oven,
mm-hmm.
a couple of seconds makes it taste a whole lot better.
Yes. The idea of applying heat in the right way, at the right temperature, mm-hmm. is something that the good restaurants, the good folks go through and they focus on that and they adjust timings and temperatures accordingly. I reference the movie The Founder, which is going back to how Ray Kroc found the guys who started McDonald's and mm-hmm. and got in with them and did the whole franchise portion.
Yeah.
But the focus that the McDonald brothers put into figuring out the right places to put the French fry machines, the shake machines, the burger grills, the assembly line process, all of that was one big thing. But another big thing that I haven't talked about here is in one of the scenes, just within the first 15 minutes, there is a discussion in regards to let's cook it a matter of 15 seconds shorter, but raise the temperature 15 degrees or 20 degrees yeah. to adjust the texture of the French fries. And that is one of those things that I think I remember McDonald's back in the 80s, and the food was a lot better back then. I haven't been to a McDonald's in a long time, mostly because the last half dozen times I've been there over the course of, it's probably been, well, it's probably been about 5 or 10 years since my last trip to McDonald's, and it was under duress. going even beyond that, they had started changing this so that it became a lot more of a breakable process where there weren't people watching over it to make sure that the right things were doing for the right amount of time in the right way, and spending a lot of time making sure that it was a good burger.
That's it.
And that's why a lot of other restaurants, the sit-down restaurants, are making better burgers, making better fries, because there are people who are skilled and trained and working with it, and they already know how to make it really good, versus we're looking for the cheapest person off the street who can just sit here and pull the burger out, put it on a patty, and put the toppings on and shove it out the window.
That's it. And they're also in different other ways. I sat there and I watched one restaurant I went into. And they were making steaks.
Yeah.
On a grill.
Yeah, yeah.
But not a flat grill.
Okay.
A grill.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm watching them, and you're watching the flames, and you're watching them. And this guy is not even watching the flames, because he knows by the steak that he put on it how long it's going to take for that one side to fry up so that he can turn it over and do the other side.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by just the fact that that man had been doing that for about 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Well, you do a whole bunch of steaks every night for 5 nights a week for years, and you learn to be able to judge all those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And automation in that case is not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a trade-off on a lot of automation in the food industry, and a lot that is not so much desired.
Yeah. Let's shift it into tech. There is plenty of automation that people set up in various worlds within tech. And sometimes, many times, it saves time. But it also doesn't always prove out well. You have to check, for instance, if you're going through and you are processing a certain set of numbers that are coming out of the system,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't take a whole lot further back in the system before mm-hmm. you get to the automation portion. All of a sudden, somebody starts recording the numbers just as whole numbers rather than as decimals. Somebody starts putting, they say, oh, I want a field which can be alphanumeric, so it can take letters and numbers in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden that automation breaks because it's only expecting numbers. And the automation will break, or it may not break, but not act the way that
the
final result is looking for.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different areas. It takes a certain level of attention to details and skill to plan that out, to plot it out, and to understand the entire process.
Yeah, it's like I was watching a movie, and the movie said they were talking about, well, You know that 40% of the people that go to your web page don't go into it anymore because they just get out of it already.
Yeah.
And I said, somebody didn't design it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's from my standpoint, as I've always looked at web pages and I'm saying, okay. What is wrong with this?
Yes. And it could be a number of different things.
Oh,
when
yeah.
we go to a website, in the old days, websites were just locations where a file sat. And that file would have been in HTML.
Yeah.
But today, a lot of the different files are served up. It's being served up via a database. It's being served up through some type of content management system, which is really delivering not a basic HTML file, but a completely modified and fully assembled from 700 different locations, yeah, all to get you your information.
Yeah.
So when you go to a website and that website isn't working quite right, it can be anywhere within that chain.
Right. And it could be very, very confusing if they don't present it correctly to the customer.
Yeah. There's a lot to this. It's one of those worlds where automation can help us. Automation will help us in a number of areas. It does take some practice, skill, and a little bit of intuition as to where the future is going to go with whatever product we've got going on. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Travis reached out with a very good question. What makes one router better than another when the internet speed stays the same? Travis reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. There's a ton of routers out there. All of these broadband routers and these mesh systems and all of these different things that deliver the internet from the demarcation point. This is where the signal comes into your house and it goes into the modem. And then it goes from the modem into the router. Now, this could be an all-in-one device. It could be multiple devices. It can be, in the case of a mesh network, in the case of my mesh network, I've got the modem, I've got the router, and I've got two more routers throughout my house to make sure that I have good speeds throughout the entire house. And all of these routers are routing traffic. So it's easy for us to associate them with traffic cops. Now, when you're going out there, you're going on to Amazon or BestBuy.com or wherever it is that you're going, you're going to see some low-priced ones. You're going to see some high-priced ones, even though a lot of the functionality may be the same. And the best way to equate this is to think about those traffic cops. Some of them, they're just rookies with flashlights, and others, they are capable of doing so many different things. They are experienced and they are able to process and do the job so much better than any of the rookies can. So let's break this down into the technical portions that we need to be thinking about whenever we're dealing with purchasing a router or at least evaluating what we have currently. First up, there is the variety of speed standards. and all of these different standards out there, the higher the Wi-Fi number is, the higher the letter is following that number, if there is a letter there, the newer ones are going to handle more devices faster. Even though your internet service provider may be giving you a matter of 100 megabit or 200 or 500 megabit download with whatever upload there is, these newer routers have better processors in them and better speed standards throughout. Now, the higher end routers are going to also add in signal range and strength. So with that router, if you have a Wi-Fi 6 router and you have another Wi-Fi 6 router, but it has three antennas on it, well, those antennas are going to have better capability of splitting up that signal and figuring out where things are and focusing that signal to all of your devices. It means that there's going to be better radios for wider, stronger coverage. And then we start getting into dual band routers and tri-band routers where they've got multiple ways to send the signal throughout your house. Sometimes it's a matter of multiple ways to deal with the signal in your house just for you, but sometimes it's on the what we call a backbone. So some mesh routers, they'll have two radios set aside for talking to your equipment, but an additional radio that's set aside to talk to each other to speed all of that traffic across the network to the ideal location. So they're all talking to each other, and they're all moving all of this information faster, but they can handle more devices as well based on the rating. Some of them, the CPU is rated for handling 30, 40, 50 items. Some of them will handle 100 different items on your network. In my case, the router is rated for 255, which is how many are in the IP address space. So I found that very interesting that they didn't commit to anything more than that, but that's kind of their goal. So they want to make sure that all of this information is going across your network. It's all safe and it's all controlled. And all of this traffic is going. Now, there is also the additional level of brains that it has where it can manage all of those devices. Each time we step up in price, each time we move up in how advanced that router is, the router that you're going to pay more for is going to manage traffic a lot better when there are many devices active. What is that? Well, that means less lag. There's going to be fewer drops. There's going to be a lot more of what you need in your home. If you've got a simple home and you don't have any smart home items and you only have a television and a laptop and a couple of items, go for the cheaper router. But if you've got a lot of items in your home, you're going to want to think about basically boosting that up. And again, I'm going to make that pitch for the mesh networks. The mesh networks are a dream. Many of them. Some of them are a little bit more complex and so forth. So when you see Eero routers, going back to this, if you see an Eero router, there's different grades of those Eero routers. They have it. Basically, you can get the basic, you can get the better, the best, the absolutely uber super wonderful series of routers with upgraded everything. Of course, along the way, they do have security features that are built in. And these security features are going to have better firewalls. They're going to auto update. They're going to have the ability to set up guest networks to keep you safer. And these are key things. There are a lot of different features that come along with these routers. Some of them are far more robust. They're building a series of routers out there. Some of them are built for, it's just mom and pop at home and they've only got a couple of items. But while they're dealing with creating that, They can also deal with creating a set of routers that are going to be capable of handling large enterprises. Most of the different systems out there, Linksys, used to be its own company. They focused on the home market. Along came Cisco, and Cisco bought them up. I don't know what the current state of them is, but that expanded the ability there. And this was something that was very key, very important along the way. Meraki was also in the business space. They weren't really focusing in the home space. So all of these are starting to come together. A lot of these companies are coming together, and they're picking the best from the low end and the business end markets and merging them together, and they've got one common platform. If you've got programmers sitting around and they have to just say, okay, this device is only going to have this level of capability, and this next one is going to have a little bit more capability, and this one over here is set up to really appeal to the nerdiest amongst us, but all we have to do is just turn it on and off in the controls there, that actually works out really well. A lot of the information that's going back and forth is, yes, really basic. It's simple. When you get it, get down to the base portion of it. Of course, there is additional customization and control. And the more you're going to pay, the more that you're going to be able to fine tune settings for setting up things like gaming. And a lot more of them are coming with parental controls. They're coming up with ways for you to VPN into your own home network. So each different step up really is a more premium level. It's going in that direction. I will tell you, yes, you can have the same bandwidth, but there's going to be so much smoother sailing through this network when all of this is well managed and it is well controlled. And the way to do that is by getting a more expensive router. The best thing that I can suggest to you, run a speed test on your network when everything's going, everything's running. And if you are getting less than what you are paying for from your internet service provider, make sure you start looking at your internal network bandwidth, what you have for those broadband routers, before you start screaming and yelling, going, hey, I pay you for this much, but you're only giving me this little bit. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. I want to spend a few moments and talk about what we think of as tech companies and how it has become absolutely blurred, obscured, and it just flipped on its head. We used to think of technology companies as Microsoft and Intel. We used to think of them as the giants that were pushing technology to us. But in reality, technology has crossed all kinds of boundaries and has arrived all the way down to our individual lives. Technology, roughly defined, it is using science and tools to better ourselves. We're talking about our personal lives. We're talking about our companies. We're talking about our interactions between all of them, all of these fitting together. Every company out there, just like every individual, needs tools to get things done. In the past, we used to use paper and quill pens and pencils to perform our work. As time has progressed, some people continued using those simple tools, and they've used them to do work, while others moved on to more complex things like calculators, and then computers and fax machines. And tech expanded. It evolved, and we got better tools along the way. Today, almost every company, save the Amish, uses computers and technology to get things done. So just like every person needs tools, every company needs technology. Now, let's go back. Let's even forget about what I said just a moment ago. When I said save the Amish. No. Even the Amish have realized this. They have websites. They have people that handle the technology side to make things better. There are some of them that have cell phones. They don't really deal with the smartphones. They are making phone calls and they're doing basic communications with those. And it took them a long time to come to that realization, though there are very interesting boundaries that occur within that community. But as tools have evolved over time, technology has evolved too. Today, technology isn't something that some companies use. It is a fundamental part of how every company operates. And if they aren't, they need to get on board. It's not just big companies that use technology. Small businesses are relying on it. Startups are depending on it to get things done. A small shop owner might use a website or an app to sell products online. And we've seen an entire rise of different industries that revolve around enabling this small person to sell their items, whether we're talking about Etsy or eBay. We're talking about all of these different layers that have enabled us to reach out with our services or products to enable us to make money to better other lives. A small freelance worker might use technology to communicate with their clients to complete projects. But I want to drill this down into a practical level. I want you to think about something. You own a small business. You're owning and managing and running a restaurant. In the past, a restaurant might have just used a simple cash register to keep track of all of the orders and money. They just key it in. Okay, you bought this. That's $12.32 or whatever it is. And then hit a few buttons and the tax automatically calculates and they sent you out the door. But today, most restaurants are utilizing the technology that's built into all of these different kiosks. These, whether we're talking about, they spin the iPad around and they have you sign, but they're tracking all of their sales right there. They are managing their menus. They're taking their orders. They're tracking inventory. They are using technology in brand new ways to connect with customers. Whether we're talking about a website, we're talking about social media, we're talking about you sign up for some kind of customer reward program. Remember, they used to hand you a business card and then they would punch a couple of holes in that business card. And when you got 10 of them, that you would get a free widget, donut, whatever it was. Today, they track it through and they automatically give it to you. Hey, thanks for coming in. Hey, by the way, you've got a free calzone today because you've ordered from us so often. And that keeps people coming back. And that's all because of technology. Every company out there now is seeking to drive customers to themselves through tech. Moving beyond that, they're looking to display their offerings via tech, take orders via the tech, tell the cooks via the tech, accept the money via tech, pay their bills via tech. Like even your local small mom and pop pizza restaurant is not immune to this. They're not traditionally thought of as a tech company, but they are now utilizing technology in many different ways to run their business. And that's why every company today needs to be thought of as a tech company. Technology is such a crucial part of how every company is operating, how they're making money. And we need to be breaking down the idea of calling anybody a tech company. Technology is no longer important to just a couple of companies. It's no longer applicable to just a few industries. Now, it's part of every industry. It's part of every different company out there from and through our lives. And it doesn't matter what realm we're talking about. It doesn't matter any of this. That's why we need to be breaking free from saying that tech itself is an industry. We are all part of tech. We are all using tech. We are all bettering our lives and ourselves and our companies by using science and tools. It's just such an amazing world we live in. And this is only going to get more and more important. Technology is a tool. You need to be using it. If you're not, you're going to be left behind. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how that all intertwines together. And I received a message from a friend of mine that they had lost four people that were coworkers. And this loss, they were let go, and they were not fired necessarily so much for what they did, but for what they typed in. You know, work chats have gotten to a very casual basis, whether we're talking Slack or Teams or Google Chat. It doesn't matter. It is easy for us to treat them just like our text messages with friends, and things can go downhill. I want you to reflect here. Are your work messages writing checks that your job can't cash? Look, I want you to think about this. In the modern day and age, we are starting to see more and more uses of AI. And I'm sure if it isn't already here, it is coming soon. In those always-on messaging apps, whatever it is you're using, and we have slid into a very casual comfort zone. We've let our guard down. We are typing like we're in a group chat with our friends rather than in a digital conference room that actually has audit trails. Here's the thing that we all need to remember. Everything you type, everything can be stored, searched, analyzed. And yes, used against you. This isn't paranoia. This is digital permanence. This is an issue where what you type today may come back to haunt you a year from now. What has changed? Well, we know that AI is getting better. We know that it can flag tone. They can use these tools to start analyzing sentiment in your messages. You say a sarcastic quip, and it may read fine to you. It may even read fine to the other person who's reading it. But that could actually look like some level of toxicity for your employer. Just because it's a casual chat, just because you get along really well with whoever it is you're chatting with, it doesn't mean that it's private. Jokes, complaints, snide remarks, they may feel like venting. It may just be venting. But now we are sealing these away into searchable archives that can be referenced, cross-referenced, just examined and used against us. Even screenshots. You know, you're taking a screenshot, but somebody else might take a screenshot of whatever it is that you're chatting with them about. And it could be a stray comment in some channel. And someone comes along and sees it, and they can save it. And they can save just the individual portion and all of that context that comes along with this may disappear. I want you to think through a few different things. First up, every keystroke counts. If you wouldn't want your message on a slide deck in an HR meeting, really, don't send it. And don't assume that every emoji is going to be softening the blow or the humor that may come along with your message. And these emojis don't always translate well across cultures and teams. You need to be thinking about every step of the way here. And before I go too far, I want to say that being professional doesn't mean you have to be robotic. You don't have to be stiff, just courteous. You need to remember to include things like kindness and empathy. Those are professional items. You can say thank you. You can ask, hey, how's it going? Hey, you know, I know things have been a little bit stressful the last week. You know, get into building relationships. You can be warm without going too informal, without acting like a couple of buddies that got together for a drink after work. You've got to remember that in the workplace, you need to be working and you need to be very careful. And I don't want you to think about using work chats to vent. Look, if you're frustrated, and we all get frustrated by various things, grab a notebook or talk it out privately. Don't do it in any kind of these different messaging apps where a misread message can land you in hot water. And you also need to be very careful about any kind of drift in the tone of messages. Some of these messages, some of these chains, we're typing all day long, we're communicating, and some of these things can start out very polite, and then we slide into jokes, and then those jokes move into inside jokes and shortcuts. That familiarity is a gift, but you've got to be very careful to not abuse it. You need to think about everything you're typing. Would this read well out of context? All the way along, we've forgotten that the computer remembers. We're going through, we're zipping off messages in real time, and the system is recording all of this for a very long time. And when AI starts going through and examining all of these different things, whether it's the tone, the timing, the frequency, our words can become part of our performance review. Work chat is like walking on freshly poured concrete. Every step is going to leave that mark. You need to walk with care. You need to walk with kindness. And you need to take every step forward with your future self in mind. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. We just celebrated Independence Day yesterday, and this is a holiday weekend, and this is the start of summer, and all of these things seem exciting for us, but one of the things I want to do is I want to do a plea that I haven't made in a while, and this is something that I wish to encourage you to do. I want you to look into your local blood bank, and I want you to consider donating. And whether it's blood, whole blood, or you do a double red, or you do platelets and plasma, that's actually what I do. I do that roughly 24 times a year. I donate my platelets and plasma, and it's something that I do that through the American Red Cross, redcross.org. And it is such an important thing to remember. Blood is something that we've had a lot of people give of their lives, that precious blood spilt on all kinds of different battlegrounds across the history of our nation. And you're going to be able to go in there and you're going to be able to do just fine. You're not going to lose your life like they did, but you're giving back the gift of life to the people that are out there that can use this. Summertime, holiday weekends, Independence Day in particular, are big times when all of the blood banks suffer and our blood supplies draw to a very small level, a low level, which is very hard to counteract. It's very hard to get people in there to donate on a holiday weekend or in the summer. I want to encourage you to think about all of the different things that are available out there in your life, your health, your ability to move around and do things. I give platelets and plasma, platelets especially because there are people out there that don't have the clotting factor, hemophiliacs. There are people that get into accidents. There are people who are going through cancer, and they need that life-giving substance flowing through their veins. It's so important. And yes, you may have heard at some point, oh, I got a tattoo, so therefore I can't donate. No, actually, there's a whole list of rules for tattoos. And the worst of them is if you got like a homemade tattoo, you have to wait 3 months. Big whoop. If you do it at a regular tattoo parlor, a state licensed tattoo parlor, no big deal. You can donate right away because they have all of these things set in place. You think you're too old? No, you're not. There are no age limits. They've even changed a number of different requirements along the way. Many of the different requirements are gone or altered. Used to be European travel and travel to various other countries. Yes, there are certain different travel requirements that they put into place and you can struggle. But you know what? You can go ahead and you can call the Red Cross. You can ask them, hey, am I eligible? And they will answer that question. There's eligibility items that are out there. I believe that if we all at least tried, that maybe we could make this world a little bit of a better place by donating blood. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.